Good morning, and welcome to the 888 Holdings Interim Results Conference Call. I will now hand over to Gigi Levy, CEO of 888. Gigi.
Thank you very much. Good morning, everyone. I'm Gigi Levy, Chief Executive Officer of 888 Holdings. As usual, I'm joined by Aviad Kobrine, our Chief Financial Officer. I presume that you all have seen this morning's interim results announcement, and so I'll briefly summarize the highlights, and then you will have the opportunity to ask questions. I'm pleased to start by saying that the first half of 2008 was another very successful one for us. We achieved record half-year results in the seventh consecutive period of quarter-on-quarter growth, which we're very proud of. I will now hand you over to Aviad to run through some of the financial details.
Thank you, Gigi. During the first half of 2008, we've continued our historical growth momentum and reported total operating income of $135 million, a 40% increase over half one last year, clean EBITDA of $28.3 million, a 63% increase over half one 2007, and clean profit before tax of $26.3 million, an increase of 39%. In fact, we have delivered our seventh consecutive half-yearly turnover growth from $55 million in half one 2005 to this half of $135 million, representing a CAGR of 16%. Our total operating income for the first half of 2008 is actually only 14% short of our entire revenue in 2006, which demonstrates the pace of growth we are generating. In terms of geographic footprint, Europe excluding U.K. grew 47%, the U.K. grew 31%, and Americas ex-U.S. 32%. In fact, Europe, excluding U.K., is now our largest market, representing 45% of turnover, with the U.K. at 41%. Our casino grew in all regions, led by 52% in Europe and 38% in the Americas, excluding the U.S. Our poker grew strongly in Europe at 34%. Increased marketing efficiency and optimization resulted in further reduction in customer bonuses from 27% to 19% in casino and from 9% to 7% in poker. While we increased marketing spend in absolute terms from $34 million to $44 million, we kept the marketing spend ratio very well under control and within the stated target, which we defined a while ago. All that was achieved with 32% increase in new first-time deposits last year, which reached 181,000 new customers at a stable CPA of $235. Our balance sheet remains strong and unlevered, as at the end of 30th of June, we had $88 million of liquid resources on our balance sheet and customer deposits of $32 million. Our trade payables reduced significantly as a result of the final payment of the Bingo acquisition. Our cash flow generating capabilities remained strong as ever, and we generated net cash flow from operating activities of $30 million, a 90% increase over previous half. Pleasingly, we have achieved this impressive growth with significant profit growth. Clean EBITDA, as I mentioned, increased 63% with margin expansion from 18% to 21%. Clean PBT also increased to $26.3 million, and clean basic earnings per share $0.071, representing 37% increase over the same period last year, demonstrating that the significant revenue growth, we can also expand our margins and ensure profitability. These are very good results, and we will be paying an interim dividend of $0.025 per share, representing 39% increase over the previous half. Over to you, Gigi.
Thank you very much, Aviad. I'll now run through a bit of the operational highlights of the period. Our continued success in the first half of 2008 was based upon our ability to deliver on all aspects of our strategy, reaping the results from strategic investments which we made in 2007, both in our offering and brand. We've continued to make strategic investment in 2008, which we expect to deliver growth in the second half of this year and in 2009. The most recent development in our growth strategy has been the parallel process of integrating third-party games into our platform and leveraging our assets to become a leading B2B provider to other operators. Both these pieces of strategy proved to be very successful so far and will be an increasingly large contributor to our growth over the medium term. However, the most important achievement in the first half of 2008 was the enormous change in our product offering. From being a provider of casino, poker, and partially bingo in 2007, we're now a comprehensive provider of all gaming segments, including the four cornerstones of online gaming: casino, poker, sports betting, and bingo. This expansion and diversification of our offering can be seen in the huge growth in our emerging offering segment, from only $2 million in half one 2007 to $19 million in half one 2008. This market-leading offering will continue to be the foundation of our future growth. Further significant developments in our offering have included opening the platform to integration with games from other vendors. We've invested heavily both on the technical side in building our integration framework and in signing games integration contracts with more than 10 different providers, giving us access to more than 1,000 games. We've launched the first group of games in Q2 and plan to launch many more, tens of them, later this year. We believe this innovative approach will increase customer loyalty and lifetime value, as well as assisting us in customer acquisition. On to our B2B activity, which I'm sure you're aware is a very exciting opportunity for us. Our most significant strategic move in 2007 was the move from a pure business-to-consumer model to a combined approach, which includes working with carefully selected strategic partners who are aiming to become online gaming virtual operators. Given the current regulatory landscape, we expect new market participants in regulated jurisdictions and feel we're very well positioned to partner with these new entrants to our mutual advantage. Following the launch of our first three partnerships in 2007, we continued the development of this new line of business in the first half of the year, and recently announced a deal with Sportech and partnership with PokerDome in Australia, which saw a step change in this aspect of the business. We see this area of the business as a key growth area and hope to tell you many interesting new things about it in the second half of the year. Now on to regulation. In Europe, the first 6 months of the year has seen continued pressure from the EU Commission on EU member states to liberalize their gaming markets. This culminated in the EU Commission initiating two new infringement proceedings against Sweden and Germany and two reasoned opinions to Greece and the Netherlands. These moves signify positive progress toward the legal framework that will allow EU-licensed operators like 888 to work openly in the EU. This pressure has resulted in several EU member states contemplating and in some cases advancing a liberalized gaming sector, including France, Spain, Sweden, Greece and Denmark. This is clearly great development for us. Outside Europe, we see initial progress towards greater regulation in Asia-Pacific, Latin America, and South Africa. Progress in these jurisdictions could permit us to work in a properly licensed environment. We still believe that the formation of a regulatory framework is the most sensible evolution for the online gaming and entertainment industry. We will continue monitoring the regulatory landscape and look for opportunities to operate in regulated markets. As for the U.S., there is no further update on the situation there. The second half of 2008 will see the ongoing execution of our strategy with additional innovation around both our business-to-consumer and business-to-business activities. We will continue improving our offering, extending our platform, leveraging our integration capabilities, and signing exciting contracts with game providers. We expect to launch our first wave of new games in the coming months with a focus on local games, which will give us better geographical reach. The PokerDome and Sportech deals are on track, and coupled with our pipeline of new deals, make us certain that B2B will become an increasingly important contributor to our half two growth and in years to come. As for the third quarter, it has started as expected, led by the emerging offering as well as stronger poker net gaming revenue following the lower activity we saw throughout June and the Euro 2008 Football Championship. This is very reassuring given that Q3 is traditionally one of the seasonally weaker periods and leads us to believe that we will see additional growth throughout the second half of the year. Given current trading, the continuous growth in our emerging offering, our successful B2B business, and our clear business strategy, we remain confident of delivering growth in 2008. Thank you, everybody. I'll now pass you back over to the moderator. We'll begin the question and answer session.
Thank you. The question and answer session will be conducted electronically. If you would like to ask a question, please press the star or asterisk key, followed by the digit 1 on your telephone keypad. Please ensure that the mute function on your telephone is switched off to allow your signal to reach our equipment. We will take questions in the order received, and we will take as many as time permits. If you find that your question has been answered, you may remove yourself from the queue by pressing star 2. Again, please press star 1 to ask a question. We will pause for just a moment to allow everyone to signal for questions. We will now take our first question from John Barasiewicz from Deutsche Bank. Please go ahead.
Morning. I've got three questions, actually. My first one, can you, in terms of the detail of the cost lines, it looks like chargebacks, for instance, were a little bit higher than before. Can you talk about that, and will they stay at that sort of level? Secondly, can you give us some guidance in terms of what your expectation is on marketing spend for the rest of the year, and perhaps 09 if you're prepared to? And thirdly, can you quantify the current trading relative to what you said before at the KPI statement in terms of the first 22 days of July were plus 2%, I think you said, in NGR terms? Thanks.
Okay, of course, John. Aviad will take the cost line questions and I'll take the two others.
Okay, John. First of all, well spotted about the chargeback. There was a slight increase in chargebacks for the entire business from 1.2% in half 1 2007 to 1.7% in the first half of 2008. However, you have to also look at the components of that and also the PSP. If you look at our core casino and poker business and you compare like for like, because we didn't have really emerging markets in 2007, you will actually see that the combination of chargebacks and PSPs actually improved from 7.2% last year to 7.1% this year. So on a like-for-like basis, we've managed actually to slightly optimize that cost line item. What happened when you actually roll forward to 2008 is when we have the bingo business. Now, the bingo business, let's not forget, about half of it is basically a B2B business. And on that business, we don't recognize the entire turnover of our licensees, but only our relevant part of the licensee. However, the chargebacks, because we give the payment service to them, is recognized in full. And that distorts slightly the ratio from where you are. But the important thing is, on a like-for-like basis, overall, chargeback and PSP actually improved.
So that's on the chargebacks. As to the marketing spend, I have perhaps a bit of a secret to tell you, and the secret is that we spend as much as we plan. The fact that the marketing ratio went down is basically because the effectivity of the marketing was higher. In other words, it's not that we said, okay, we reached our revenues, let's spend less. We actually spent what we planned, and that resulted in better results, which led us to a lower ratio. In other words, we keep the guideline of around 35% spend out of top-line revenue, which is more or less our sweet spot for continued growth. We hope that we'll always have positive surprises in which we spend the money that we expect to spend, but get additional revenues, which make it a lower ratio. I hope that answers the question. We clearly will strive to always lower it, but at the time being, in terms of guidelines, we'll continue setting the guidelines at around 35%, because this is how we model it. In terms of current trading, the first couple of weeks of July, we're 3% higher on Q2, as we said, followed by a bit of a weaker period in August, which brings us to flattish or slightly above Q2 figures at this point. This is all becoming relatively marginal here and there. We do very much plan to have an 8 consecutive quarter-on-quarter growth. However, as I think I've said openly, following a stronger beginning to July, August was slightly weaker, which is probably more in line with vacations, etc., and the Olympics. So overall, current trading is good. It is higher than what we expected it to be, but it's not dramatically above Q2. Does that answer the question, John?
Yes, thanks.
Once again, if you would like to ask a question, please press star 1 to signal. As a reminder, if you are using a phone with a mute function, please make sure that the mute function is turned off to allow your signal to reach our equipment. We will take our next question from Andrew Lee from Dresdner Kleinwort. Please go ahead.
Good morning, guys. I've got four questions, if I can. Just on the depreciation, this obviously doubled year on year. Is there anything one-off in there, or is that a level that we should expect going forward? The second and third questions are surrounding regulation. You mentioned the progression in France, Spain, Sweden, Greece, and Denmark. Are you actively targeting any of those regions at the moment, or is that all, you know, upside? And then in Asia, if you could just give some examples to back up the, you know, the comments on liberalisation there and a potential time frame as you see it at the moment to, you know, progression over there. And then finally, just on current trading, you say poker's a little bit better. Is there any, can you quantify what that is up Q-on-Q at the moment?
Yeah, of course. Let's start with depreciation of the ad.
Sure. Andy, depreciation itself, there is no specific one-off, and I think this is the level that you'll see forward. However, you may refer to amortization. Amortization will be considerably lower in the second half. Amortization is basically the tail of some amortization of assets we bought as part of the Bingo acquisition. Most of it is already gone, and there will be a much smaller amount going forward into half two.
Okay, thanks.
As to regulation, so first of all, the markets that we've mentioned, such as Greece, France, etc., are clearly markets where we work today. However, the way we work there today is based on our Gibraltarian license and mostly through online marketing, affiliate marketing, etc. We're not in a position, because the publishers are not willing to entertain this, we're not in a position to go on television, we're not in a position to go on billboards, we're not in a position to do any of the big things that a company like us usually does in regulated markets. Now, the meaning is that once these markets will regulate, the opportunity for us is huge. Just to clarify, I think that when we fight today against small operators on a French customer, for example, then potentially the ability of a small operator to attract a customer through an affiliate website is not dramatically different than our ability to attract a customer through an affiliate website. However, once you start going on television, once you start going on billboards, once you start doing things which are very visible, what you get is you get the brand impact. And then not only do you get additional customers from these other sources, but you also get better results on your affiliate channel, on your online marketing channel, etc. So we definitely see this as a huge step forward for us, and we think that this is something that we should all be, the entire industry should be very happy about, especially the big players. Setting aside, of course, the issue that in some of these jurisdictions, it may be that not everyone will get a license. It could be limited in numbers. And then we, as a publicly traded company, one which has a clean track record and probably the best responsible gaming abilities in the market, we think that we're in a great position to be one of the people getting a license in case it's limited. And we do have some discussions like that with some governments. This is on Europe. On Asia, the change is a bit different. It's not under the EU pressure, of course, but just to touch on a few, the Philippines right now are granting online gaming licenses. That's the first location. Macau is planning to grant online gaming licenses, though the scope of these licenses is not clear. There are some movements in Vietnam, in some other jurisdictions, in which we and others have been having discussions about online gaming licenses. And altogether, it seems that the Asian Pacific governments are taking slowly but surely the position of, if you can't beat them, join them. In other words, online gaming is something that exists and it won't go away. We may just as well license it and take a share of the upside. And this is something that we're seeing across Asia Pacific and also across Latin America. Last but not least, on poker, poker growth Q3 on Q2 is between 2 to 3%. But it seems to be stable growth, so numbers stay higher than what they were before, and there are a few things that we're planning to do that we expect will also increase them further in Q4.
But just following up on the Asian thing, I mean, how excited do you get about sort of like a Macau license? Does that mean that if you get a license in Macau, you will then actively target territories around it, or is that just will you just abide by targeting Macau citizens only?
Well, I think that it's a great question and one that I don't have a perfect answer for, because it all depends what's going to be the realms of this license. But quite specifically, I don't think, for example, that the Philippines license or a Macau license is going to dramatically improve our position in, for example, selling services in Japan. For that, you'd need a Japanese license. However, what we see is that we think that the Macau license, while it may not be life-changing, a Macau license would slowly but surely lead to some sort of a limited license in China, Taiwan, etc. So we're seeing a move all across. We're also hearing some things about changes in China, which we're interested in. So the entire industry is moving over there. I'm not 100% that, as you indicated, that the Macau license is specifically life-changing. But a Philippines license, for example, could signify a decent business in the Philippines themselves, for example.
Great, thanks.
Thanks, Andy.
We will now take a question from Ivar Jones from Evolution Securities. Please go ahead.
Good morning. Could you talk about the effects of currency on the Q2 and first half results and how much of a benefit it's been, and also what effect it's having in the numbers we're talking about in Q3? Second, can you talk about the provision of payment processing services and what exactly you're offering that's different now and how that strategy is developing? And third, could you talk about the size of the pipeline and the potential in the pipeline in the B2B developments that you are pursuing? I guess Sportech and Pokerdome are not the end of it. Thank you.
Sure. Aviad, will you take the first one?
Sure. Ivor, I think about the currency, we have to divide it into two separate questions. One is the balance sheet effect, and the other one is the operational cost effect. From a mere balance sheet effect, half one 2007, we had an exchange gain of about $750,000. This half, we had a very small loss of about $80,000. And that all is buried in what we call admin expenses. So there's about $800,000 there, which moved against us this half. In terms of the operational exchange changes, the dollar pound hasn't changed much between the two periods. However, what has changed dramatically was the appreciation of the Israeli shekel against the dollar. And since we have a large cost base in Israel denominated in shekels, we have suffered in the tune of $3.5 million more higher expenses in the first half of 2008 as a result of the strong shekel.
So does that answer that question, Ivan?
I was also thinking about the effect of the change in sterling dollar on the reported revenue and the growth rate.
Well, our revenues currently also from UK customers are in US dollars, so that had zero effect on us. One could claim that this could have a theoretical effect on the buying power of UK customers. However, historically, we've seen that the customers deposit in round numbers in dollars and do not necessarily try to do the exact translation of what it means in pounds. So in other words, we don't really see any effect on that.
That implies what? That you're seeing an increase in the sterling amount deposited in order to deliver the same amount of dollars per customer?
No, well, the way it goes is on our current system is that the customers actually define what they want to deposit in dollars. Hence, they keep depositing the same amount of money, although it costs them slightly different as currency exchange rates change.
Got it. Okay, thank you.
Okay, as to payment processing services, so as we indicated before, we are interested to take our payment processing capabilities and use it to generate additional revenues. Our decision was that we'll start doing this through our B2B overall focus, and for all the customers that we work with, we actually provide the payment processing services, which actually gets us to be more professional in doing payment processing for others. And we expect that the beginning of next year we'll hopefully see the first deal in which we provide payment processing to somebody who is not our customers on anything else. In other words, a standalone payment processing service, which is another line of business that we're planning to grow. In terms of the size of the pipeline on the B2B side, it's always, you know, when you move to B2B, it's always difficult to quantify whether the pipeline is big, fat, slim or anything else, but right now, let's say that compared to the number of existing customers that we have, the pipeline is extremely big. In other words, we could easily see how we double the number of contracts we have based on the existing pipeline. Does that answer the question?
I guess I'm trying to push you to say something about what the revenue potential of B2B could be 1 year from now, 2 years from now, relative to the group as it is today.
I think that the question is not necessarily on revenue, it's on contribution, because we measure revenues from B2B differently, of course.
Right.
I think that contribution level, in a couple of years, it will be around 50% of our business.
And I assume you're not expecting the B2C business to shrink?
Oh, definitely not.
Okay, thanks very much.
Our next question will come from Richard Carter from Numis Securities. Please go ahead.
Good morning, guys.
Good morning.
Three questions. Firstly, obviously you said that the shekel-dollar impacted the business by $3.5 million in H1. So what do we see happening sort of in H2? Will that largely reverse? Secondly, can you talk about the customer bonuses, which obviously you continue to reduce them relative to other operators where they seem to be increasing? And what should we expect going forward? Is that sort of trend going to continue, or is it flattening out at this level? And then finally, on the marketing mix, you've obviously increased the use of affiliates relative to offline. But going forward, I mean, if they're revenue share affiliates, shouldn't we see that impact the overall percentage of marketing spend? I.e.,
should
marketing spend start to reduce if you're using revenue share affiliates?
Richard, hi. Answering your exchange rate situation, first of all, I'm not going to cast a judgment what's going to be the exchange rate next month. There are clever people for me to do that. What I can tell you is that the pressure between the shekel and the dollar has eased considerably and moved in our direction. At some point it reached 3.2 shekels to the dollar. It's trading now at about 3.55. So Q3 certainly started positively in that respect. The second item is, of course, that where the dollar used to trade at about 1.98 to 2 to the pound and up to 2.1 at some point, it certainly is much stronger now. Early morning trading was 1.83. And this is also good for us because our sterling cost basis in Gibraltar and some of our UK marketing, which are denominated in sterling, also cheaper, so it's also a movement in our direction. And of course, given the recent movement in shekel, we're going to put in place hedging strategies to ensure we're not going to caught on guard in the future. In terms of customer bonuses, I don't think that you're going to see a significant continuation in this trend. We have shown a continuous decline in customer bonuses from the days of the IPO. The last change was quite dramatic. It is influenced to some extent by the casino and poker, which actually grew very dramatically. I think going forward, sort of the levels that we have now, about 20% in the casino and 7 to 8 in the poker, maybe even 9, is the rate we're going to see. You're not going to see this going down to 10 and 5%. I think that's not sustainable.
Yeah, and I'll add on top of that that this figure, of course, for I'm sure you're aware of it, is transparent at the end of the day on the revenue figure. And therefore, it could may just as well, because we're adjusting it all the time, it could may just as well that we'll decide in some areas to increase it if we feel it's beneficial for us. So this is a decision for us. We've managed to keep it as effective as possible, so which means that we achieve same growth with lower bonuses. But at the end of the day, this is one of our marketing tools, and we'll use it. And if competitors, for example, will change the way they bonus, it could very well be that we'll need to adjust it as well. We constantly optimize it, and right now we feel it's at a good spot. But this is definitely one of the tools that we keep the ability to ourselves to change if required. As to the last question on the marketing mix, yes, we have been using a lot more affiliates. I have to say that the majority of these affiliates are CPA affiliates. We still take advantage of the gap in knowledge between us and our affiliates. Our affiliates know that they bring us customers, but they don't necessarily know what's the lifetime value of our customers. We do, which puts us in a great position to say, well, we're willing to pay you $200 in advance because
we know that the customer value is $1,000. What I can tell you is that the average affiliate CPA is not higher than our overall CPA, which means that the further use of affiliates, if we find it to be useful, is not going to increase our CPA. It's actually going to keep it around the same place. Does that answer the question?
Yeah, and in terms of, you've increased the offline spend, but obviously as a percentage it's declined. I mean, do you see that continuing?
Well, I think that depends a lot on the regulatory changes,
yeah.
Because the offline spend is mainly done in markets where we can work openly. For example, our offline spend in France was practically zero, for example.
Yeah.
So that all depends on the opportunities. We don't decide in advance whether offline is something that we'll do when we start a year. We plan it on the markets where we can do it, and then as opportunities present themselves, we'll do more or less offline. Offline is a very effective way of marketing if done correctly, and I think this is one of the areas that we master. That's one of the reasons why we feel that any market opening up is an advantage to everyone, but a bigger advantage to us.
Okay, thanks.
Thanks, Richard.
As a final reminder, please press star 1 to ask a question. We will pause for a moment to see if anyone has a final question. As there are no further questions, I would now like to turn the call back over to your host today for any additional or closing remarks.
Thank you very much, guys. I want to thank you. I know it's a very busy day, and I want to thank you for finding the time to join us. This has been a very good first half for us, and with the current trading and some new things that we're doing, we're extremely sure that there's going to be an interesting additional quarters coming on, and that 2009 is going to be great. Looking forward to meeting all of you on our next call or meeting. Thanks very much. Bye-bye.
That will conclude today's conference call. Thank you for your participation, ladies and gentlemen. You may now disconnect.